Chapter 33. I walked rapidly back to the house. As I stepped inside, I felt suddenly faint. I stood with my back against the door for a moment, taking deep breaths. Then I climbed the stairs to Barak and Tamasin's room. I knocked, and Barak's voice bade me enter. They made, at first sight, a peaceful domestic scene. Tamasin was sitting at the table sewing. Barak was lying on the bed. He looked relaxed, but then I noticed a slight frown on his brow and one foot jiggled up and down. "Jack," I said, "I'm afraid I need you for a while."
"Not another," he said, his eyes widening.
"No." Tamasin looked at us with anxious eyes. I smiled reassuringly. "It's all right. We need to go on an errand."
"What's happened?"
Barak asked as we walked back down the stairs. He seemed glad to be called to action now he knew we were not going to gaze at another tortured victim. I told him about Belknap's confession about the solicitor, Felday. "You go drinking with some of the jobbing solicitors," I said. "Do you know him?"
"I've had him pointed out to me," Barak answered. "Thin, sharp-faced fellow. Gets most of his clients from the Westminster Sanctuary. He's well known down there."
He looked at me seriously.
"My friend said he'll do anything for money. And they're no angels."
I paused at the bottom of the stairs. We must go and see him now. If this client of his is the killer, and who else would be asking questions like that about us? We can identify him at last. I hesitated in the doorway. I wonder, should we fetch Harsnett?
"We shall go to Felday at once," Barak said. "Take our chance now."
"Yes. It's the best opportunity that has come our way yet." Barak's face set hard.
"So that's how the arsehole knew where I lived. And he would have been told you work at the court of requests. He's probably been following us around."
"So much for supernatural powers granted by the devil. Nothing supernatural about getting a crooked solicitor to get information from a crooked barrister. And he must have money, if he can afford to set a solicitor and a barrister as spies."
"We still don't know how he's been able to follow us unseen."
"We soon will."
"What are you going to do about Belknap?"
"Send Peter to fetch Guy. Let's find him."
"I'd leave that old arsehole to rot."
"Not in Dorothy's house. Come on." I went to the kitchen. Philip Orr was seated at the table, a mug of beer in his hands, a stool creaking under his weight as he talked to the two boys, Timothy and Peter, who were sitting at his feet.
"And then the king entered the city," he said dramatically. "You've never seen anyone like his majesty. A huge man, taller by a head than all the courtiers and servants who followed him, jewels glinting in his cap and on his doublet, and beside him, Queen Anne Boleyn, that was later found to be such a wicked strumpet."
He stood hastily as we came in. The boys too scrambled to their feet.
"Sorry, sir," Orr said. "I was just telling them about my time as a city constable."
"That's all right, but I have a job for Peter to do."
"Come,"
I said to the older boy. "I'll write a note. I want you to take it down to Bucklersbury quick as you can." I looked at Timothy.
"Is it not time you were abed?"
"Yes, sir."
I'd been pleased to see Peter and Timothy side by side. There was a new sparkle in Timothy's eyes that had been so dull before.
"Good night, then," I said.
Peter followed us out. I went into the parlour, hastily scribbled a note to Guy and gave it to him. He hurried off. "Right," I said to Barak. "Let's see what good Master Felday has to say for himself.
Addle Hill's not far. Bring your sword."
We walked quickly along Fleet Street to the city wall. The guard there, seeing my lawyer's robes, let us through. The huge bulk of St. Paul's Cathedral was no more than a vast dark shape ahead of us. It was a dark night, the moon hidden by clouds, and I smelt more rain in the air.
"You and Tamasin made a peaceful-looking scene just now."
I'm trying to behave, but it's hard with this business constantly knocking round my head.
It'll come right. As we turned into Carter Lane, we saw a commotion ahead of us. Two constables had a ragged-looking man by the collar.
I only want to sleep in the doorway, he said. It's going to rain again. Then get wet.
The constables poked him with the end of their staffs, sending him staggering into the street.
Be gone, mange hound!
The vagrant turned away, and the constables, hearing our footsteps, turned to us. I'm a barrister visiting his solicitor, I said, as they held up their lanterns. They bowed and let us pass. Addle Hill was a long street leading down towards the river. At the top, the houses were large, old four-story buildings with overhanging eaves, most of them dilapidated-looking. Built on Thames mud as they were, many had settled and shifted with the years, and some looked ready to topple over. A woman peered at us from a doorway, then melted back into the darkness.
Good few oars round here, Barrack said quietly.
No one else about, though. We're going to have to knock at a lot of doors to find him. A group of figures was approaching up the street, some carrying lanterns, conversing quietly. A man and woman left the group and, calling good night, went into one of the houses.
We could ask these folk, Barrack said.
Excuse me, I said, stepping into the path of the group. An old man at their head raised a lantern. I saw that he and the people behind him wore dark clothes and were carrying Bibles. They must be on their way back from some meeting. I asked if he might know where a solicitor named Feldday lived. He shook his head, but a young man stepped forward.
I know him,
he said. He took in my lawyer's robe.
Is he instructing you, sir?
I have some business with him.
He's not well esteemed among his neighbours,
the young man said censoriously. He was no more than 20.
He's known as unscrupulous and irreligious.
There was a murmur of agreement within the group. I frowned at the young man.
My business is my affair, I answered sharply.
Now will you have the Christian charity to tell me where he lives? The young man shook its head sorrowfully, then pointed down the hill.
Half a dozen houses down on the right, the house with the blue door.
Thank you,
I answered briskly and stepped out of their way. The group moved on.
He spoke irreligiously, Thomas,
one of them said loudly enough for me to hear.
Talking lightly of Christian charity.
Barrack looked after them.
More godly men, he said. They never miss a chance to tell off someone they think less pure than them.
They're bold walking about in a group like that after dark with Bonner after them all.
Probably hoping to be martyrs like half these godly folk.
I took a deep breath. Right. Let's find Feldday. The house we'd been directed to was less shabby than the rest. The blue door recently painted. I tried the handle, but it was locked. I knocked several times before the door was answered by a woman in her 30s. She smiled at us.
Yes, sirs.
We're seeking Master Feldday.
The smile turned immediately to a scowl.
You and several others, she said. He's not been in for days. I keep having to answer the door to people looking for him.
Perhaps we could go to his rooms.
Where are they? First floor on the left. And tell him when you find him that if he goes away again to let people know. It's not a neighbour's duty to answer the door every 5 minutes.
She delivered her last words to our backs as we hurried up the stairs. There was a wide landing on the first floor, two doors leading off. The layout was similar to the old barge where Barrack and Tamasin lived, only larger and cleaner. We knocked loudly on the left-hand door. There was no reply. Barrack tried it. It was locked.
Where's the arsehole got to? He asked. Think he skipped?
I don't know. I hesitated for a moment, then said, Break it down. He looked at me.
You sure? That's breaking and entering.
We have Cranmer behind us if anyone complains.
We shall get some light first. I'll go and ask that woman for a candle.
He went back down the stairs while I looked at the closed door. I wondered if part of the killer's deal with Faldae, for I was sure the killer was his client, was that he should make himself scarce for a while, in case I managed to follow the trail back to him. If so, I would find him. Barak returned, carrying a candle.
I think that woman downstairs is high-class doxy. She asked if the lawyer wanted to visit her. I told her, you think about it.
He grinned. But I sensed the anxiety behind his clowning. She'll be disappointed then. Give me the candle. Let's get inside. Barak took a step back, then kicked hard and expertly at the lock. The door flew open with a crash, banging against the wall. Inside, darkness and an unexpected breath of cool air. I cupped a hand before the candle flame to protect it. There's a window open somewhere, I said.
If he's gone away, maybe he left the window open to air the place. It's a bit whiffy.
Barak drew his sword and we stepped carefully inside. There were several doors leading off the hallway. One was half open. That was where the draft of air was coming from. Barak drew his sword and with the point gently pushed it fully open. Inside, I made out a wall lined with shelves. Under the open window was a large desk, and my hand tightened on my dagger as I saw the figure of a man lying slumped across it. He wore a white shirt. One of his arms lay on a little pile of papers. The corner of the top page waved up and down in the light breeze. We went in. Barak prodded the prone figure lightly with his sword tip. He did not stir. I brought the candle over and shone the light on the man's head. He was young, no more than 30, with thick brown hair and a thin, handsome face, the features delicate. His eyes were shut, his expression peaceful. He looked as though he had fallen asleep.
It's Faldae, Barak said.
Something moved in the room. We both jumped around. Barak pointed his sword at a corner. Then he gave a tense bark of laughter as we realized the edge of a brightly coloured wall hanging had been caught by the breeze.
Jesus, my heart was in my mouth there, he said.
Mine too.
We went over to the window and closed it, then used the candle to light a lamp that stood on a table. Then he took the man gently by the shoulders and lifted him upright in his chair. It was hard work because his shirt front was a mass of blood which had flowed onto the table and congealed there. Barak laid down his sword and ripped the man's shirt open. I winced at the sight of a large stab wound in his chest, right over his heart.
At least this poor fellow died quickly, Barak said quietly. A stab to the heart. He wouldn't have known what hit him.
He looked at me.
Is this the sixth victim?
No, I said quietly. This killing was quickly and simply done, not like the others. And I see no symbolic linking to waters drying up.
You mean someone else killed Faldae? Barak asked, astonished.
No, I think it was our killer, I answered quietly, but not as part of his sequence. I think Faldae was killed in case we found our way to him or in case he talked. I sighed. Bielnap told Faldae I was persistent. I looked at poor Faldae. I think the killer came to visit him, calling on him as a client to his solicitor. They were probably sitting talking across the table when he thrust the dagger in his heart. Sure enough, an empty chair was positioned opposite where Faldae sat. I looked again at the solicitor's oddly peaceful face. By the sound of it, Faldae was an irreligious man. Just as well for him. If he had been an apostate from the godly men, he would no doubt have been incorporated into the sequence, and he would have died slowly and dramatically. I began prowling round the room.
He didn't want Faldae found quickly. That's why he left the window open to keep the room cool and prevent the smell of death going through the house too quickly.
I'd say he's been dead a few days, Barrack said. He's rotting. You can catch the smell close too. God, the bastard's clever.
Come, I said. Help me. I want to go through the desk and all these papers. See if there's some sort of clue. A note. A receipt. Anything. For an hour, we searched the solicitor's office and the rest of the neat, well-appointed little dwelling. Outside, heavy rain started again, hissing on the cobbles and dripping from the eaves. But among all the papers, we found nothing. Only an empty square of dust on one of the shelves where some papers had been taken, probably Felday's notes for his spying work. The trail had gone cold.